Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, I have one question and one question only for you.
Oh, God, here we go.
Nier Automata, a JRPG.
Well, my friend, Scott Tailford, my dear, dear friend. Nier Automata.
It's weird, right?
Potato Patata is 100% a... Yes, it's a JRPG. I mean, why is it not? Why are people saying that it's not? It's got me questioning it. And I just thought that it was an assumed thing that it was.
I think there's, I would say, and maybe this is just me fracturing reality itself, that there's a difference between a JRPG and a Japanese RPG. There is a difference between an RPG that is made in Japan,
yes,
and a JRPG as a genre, as something that tends to have a party-based system and meaningful leveling and, I don't know, turn-based combat, I might even go so far as saying. Although I would,
but then Final Fantasy VII Remake, then, is that not a JRPG?
Well, that's, see, I had this argument with Josh in the office. Basically, we had a writer on the website, I think it was John Tibbetts, did a whole article on the greatest JRPGs of all time. And it's really, really well written, it's great, the pics are incredible.
Yeah.
But he had Nier Automata in there, and I was going over it as I was reviewing stuff for the website, and I just sort of said to Josh, I was like, would you class that as a JRPG? And he was like, yeah, of course. And I was like, what do you mean? And then it just led to this thing. So I put it out on Twitter as a poll, and the yeses won. It's definitely, according to the public, a JRPG.
Yeah.
But it's just not to me, because Final Fantasy 6 through 10 are JRPGs. Persona 5 is a JRPG, mm-hmm, as are the other Personas. You know, whatever. So Dragon Quest is a JRPG. And so Chrono Trigger or something. Doesn't it, like, the turn-based combat thing you can get rid of, but there's a feel to a JRPG, and I get that it's not necessarily that quantifiable.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say Nier Automata has it. I don't necessarily even really feel like you're playing a role in that RPG.
So what would you classify it then as? Just an action game?
Just like an open world action game. Like, it has RPG mechanics in it, but I feel like every game has RPG mechanics in it.
Yeah,
no,
you're right. You wouldn't class like Biomutant, which is effectively the same thing as an RPG, because of the fact that it has leveling up in it. That's mm-hmm. one thing, but that does not make it. You know what? I'd say
I guess that wasn't made in Japan. So
what you probably need to do is just have a little prefix on it, just saying like traditional JRPG, modern JRPG. Mm. Like a modern JRPG, I would actually accept that as a terminology for it, because it is so like loose and all encompassing and allows elements from other genres to take over. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'd say it's a modern JRPG, but not a traditional one.
That would calm down the room. That definitely makes it like feel more like there's like
that's all I'm here
RPG.
For, man. It's to basically just walk in and go, whoa, just, whoa, just whoa. Josh, put down that stapler and like take that evil glint out of your eye. We're not doing this today.
We needed that when, and we'll get around to it, because I think I'm literally the 0.001% of people who just don't care about The Last of Us TV show and didn't have much fun with it. But I'll get there in time. I definitely don't want to.
I feel
be
like
that
you're just
guy.
Making enemies left, right, and center with that
I know,
statement.
I
because
just,
like I haven't seen it, but I have seen clips of it. I obviously get everything spoiled for me as well, because that's just the nature of the job. So I know everything that's gonna happen. But then again, I also played the video game, so therefore I know exactly what's gonna happen.
You've kind of already seen the TV show.
But
then,
the thing is that all of these people, like, they're taking the same clip, yet they're championing different ideals. So there's some people who will play that scene where they are on he's on the couch. Yep. And Ellie is talking about this thing, and it is one-to-one exactly like the video game. And everyone's like, this is the most faithful recreation of a video game ever. Isn't it perfect? And then there's other people that just go, wow, isn't this a lazy, insipid version of it? Why would I ever want to watch this when I've already played the video game? But my question for you, Scott Tailford,
yes,
that will hopefully dissipate your anger, is that... is this made for you?
No, it's not. The thing is, we already did a whole pod on this. And it's, yeah, the thing is, I watched the episode again because I was just like, it's such unanimous praise across the board. And the thing that I'm definitely struggling with is just divorcing the original material from it. Like, I said this on the other pod, but I've never been so in love and absolutely love and cherish and be precious of an original material and then watch it be translated or adapted for another medium. Like, I wasn't a Lord of the Rings book reader and watch it get translated. I guess, actually, I was a huge Hobbit fan, and when those movies came out, I was like, that's terrible.
Yeah, but then they were sorry for you. Sorry for you.
So it was easy to be like, oh, that kind of sucks. I just, that whole thing of like you're recreating scenes beat for beat, some people absolutely love that. I just go, what else have you brought to the table? Because personally, I think there's a much more interesting conversation to be had about what an adaptation is between mediums. Because I would rather have something where they take the source material and then you adapt it, but you do different things to it, or you do something that feels like you're making it fresh. If you're literally just reshooting something that's already cinematic, to me, that's just not that exciting. Because something like Castlevania or Arcane, there's way more ground to make, to call their own in that stage. Like, you know, we've never seen like a 2 hour and a half Sonic thing before. So it's like, that was something. The Mario movie, like, it's stuff that's not been done before.
Yeah, no, I totally get you, because when we apply it to cinematic conventions, let's just go and use that as the comparative term. I remember when Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho was remade. And the one thing that people said was it's going to be a shot-for-shot remake of it. But the question is, what's the point? And it comes to this idea of updating. It needs to be updated. It's the same thing that Disney are doing with all of their live-action adaptations for their original hand-drawn animation movies. It comes down to a point of, what is the point? Is this an update that's adding something to it? Is it relevant? Is it needed? Is it necessary? And in my opinion, when it is a shot-for-shot remake where you are doing exactly the same beats, it's probably not. But then again, it's for a different audience. It's not
for us.
The thing. It's the problem of ownership, like you say. We love this franchise. We love the fact that they are treating it with an adaptation. But it's not meant for us. It's meant to be for other people who didn't want to play video games but can enjoy the medium of TV. And fine, if they walk away with the exact same experience that we had with those games, who are we to deny them from that?
No, of course. I mean, the thing is, like, I'm not, like, it's obviously a thing where you say it on a podcast and it's like, oh my God, because I just shrugged the whole way through. I was like, the game version of that's better, whatever.
But that doesn't mean it was bad, though, does it? Doesn't mean it was bad. You really enjoyed it, it just didn't do anything new.
My thing was just like going like, yeah, that is that scene again. That is that thing again.
Yeah,
and then knowing that we had the podcast slot, I was like, well, I'm not going to lie and tell you that I absolutely loved it and join the chorus of people loving it, because go have fun. I'm not going to pretend that I liked it more than I did. I was pretty shruggy through most of it. And so it was one of those things. But yeah, like overall, like as an adaptation, it is obviously solid. It is replicating those scenes. I think that's the interesting part of it. Is that what we want from an adaptation? And obviously, it depends how cinematic the thing is in the first place. But I do love that I can have a conversation about The Last of Us's story, narrative, themes, whatever, with my parents. And I couldn't do that for the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's
because they're watching it now, and I love that. I just think that for me, it's the wider conversation on, I guess some of it's The Last of Us as a property. I kind of want to get a t-shirt that just says the franchising of us in the font of The Last of Us, because I'm just like, you've got your multiplayer, you've remade it twice. It's going to have a part three now, like whatever. But yeah, so like you said, you're going to check in. You told me before recording, you're going to check in after the season's done.
Yeah. I mean, you know me, man. I'm much like my game of the year philosophy in that I always wait for a game to come out, get balanced, all the patches, all the fixes, all the DLC, and then I'll buy the game of the year edition. I do the same when it comes to TV shows, because I do want to binge them. There's like... the most frustrating thing in the world is that I thought that I timed it right in that My Hero Academia had finished its latest season, but annoyingly it took a break just before Christmas and then has come back with more episodes, and I'm like, damn it, I thought that I was completely, because I'd left it for months and months to just go through and binge season after season, and now I've just got to the end and I'm like, I'm not only on a cliffhanger of the last episode, but I don't even know when the next one's coming out, because I was like, no.
I only just started My Hero Academia because I absolutely adore Demon Slayer. I think it's the best
great
anime
fun, great fun.
Years. And I feel like there's like the whole idea, like the way the characters are drawn in Demon Slayer and kind of in My Hero Academia, where it's way more experimental, just overall flair to the characters. Like maybe the colors of their eyes have like patterns in them or something. It's just like stuff that's really over the
people
top.
People are just like, this person here has just got completely black eyes and red pupils. That's fine. That's just fine. Whatever.
That's like, what it is.
What it is, mate. Chill out.
And I quite like that as an approach, because I was looking at, I'm going to get Fire Emblem Engage this afternoon, because I want to like play a new thing. And so I was looking at the main character in that, and they've got like bright blue and bright red hair, kind of like Kira Hogan in AEW.
That's been a bit divisive, that character design. I won't lie, because anyone who goes into a game that has the word, like, it's like the cross thing, and then it's got the crossing of the red and blue hairs in the middle of the face, is like, come on, man. Like, seriously?
Yeah, because it's like, can you tell they're between good and bad? Which side they're going to go with? But yeah, so I just, I don't know how we got into that tangent. Well, we should, entire podcast.
I was about to say, we should at this point introduce what this podcast is. We are only a svelte 8 minutes into the podcast before we tell people what they're actually listening to. No, it's not just two friends having a ramble. It's two friends having a ramble about the questions you ask. It is the UBP, the UBP, the UBP, also known as the Untitled Banter Podcast. And he is your host, Scott Tailford. I am Jules Gill, and I'm going to be kicking things off with a question from Instagram, my friend. And we're going to go to... Locks London, who says, favorite sports game of all time? For me, it's SmackDown versus Raw, or Here Comes the Pain, or Pro Evolution Soccer 4. Now, this is what I wanted to ask you. I know that they say that it's sports entertainment in the WWE, but do we count that as being a sports game?
A sport
is a thing where two teams or two opponents go, and there is a... There is no known outcome as to who is going to win. Now, match fixing is the core concept of wrestling. So do we count it as a sport?
I think that I like the philosophy of how much of a sport is wrestling, because the actual competitive bit is all handled backstage. It's all like, how valuable are you as a person? Can we actually have the conversation about making you a champion?
How much you can absolutely moan to the ear of the promoter and get them under your wing sort of thing. Yeah, I know
moan that. Moan JF, that's his role.
Oh, man, just look at the whole CM Punk stuff, for example. Great example of that, but yeah.
But yeah, I think that's the actual competition. Like, that's the real, like, you have to stake your claim backstage and make a case for, like, you know, putting me over with the crowd and let me have a belt and whatever else. I'm simplifying that down so much. But I guess for games, I guess, to have that conversation on the best sports games, like, the game itself is competitive, especially if you play it multiplayer.
Yeah.
Like, there's that side of it. And it was always in the sports section in, like, game stores.
So we'll count that as a sports game, but is it going to be your favorite sports game ever?
No, my favorite sports game is immediately NBA Street Volume 2. It's just going for it. One of the best soundtracks in a game, one of the best feels to a game. It was the first thing I'd done, well, second, third thing I got on my Steam Deck, and I was just like, oh man, the warm embrace of EA Big mixed with basketball. It didn't get any better.
To be fair, like, what else could you add into it? I mean, where's the sequel? Where's the follow-up to these sort of crazy offshoot games that EA Big
just
did?
Just do a
little
collection. I think they just don't afford the music anymore. They're always, the licensing is too much, so we just don't do it. But it sucks, because those games were phenomenal.
I'd say that my favourite sports game as well actually comes... I'm going to say there's going to be like a toss-up between a few different games that have really captured my heart. Now, Pyre is one of the best sports games ever, because it's a sports game with heart. It's emotional. It's devastating when your team does well enough and you have to say goodbye to your players.
That's like NBA Jam meets Hades.
I honestly love the concept behind this. Like, you will get a good team, but the better your team does, the more chance they have of being promoted out of the league and out of existence. So you're like, that's clever. So the better I do, the worse my team is going to get, in theory. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Oh, Pyre is... Because the Pyre is super massive... Super Giant.
Yeah,
Games,
Super Giants, yeah.
Who made Transistor and Hades and everything. Yeah, if people haven't played Pyre, it's just like a basketball game. Quite very quick plays, but it's like teams of three on each other.
It's like basketball meets rugby, isn't it? It's very strange.
There's full contact and stuff.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that game, but it's annoying that it's the one of the games in their franchise that didn't actually do that well, because every other one, like Transistor, Bastion, Hades, obviously they are household names, just in independent games. It's just like they have exploded onto the market. But Pyre just kind of was like, I guess it's because it was marketed as a sports game, wrongly so, I'd say, in many cases.
There is a lot of character building, world building, and dialogue and stuff. But Pyre is an overall package. The music as well, like Darren Korb. I could talk about Supergiant for a long time. They're one of my favorite devs. Pyre is a beautiful shout for that. We heard McAllister NYC said Nier Automata still isn't a JRPG. I don't care what Scott's poll said. He also says, what is the best special edition of a game that we've ever bought? I forget if we've mentioned this before.
Best special edition that we've ever bought.
What's the most you've blagged? Well, actually, I guess it might not necessarily be most money, whatever your best.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's a few that I've managed to get in through for review that have been absolutely stonkingly good. the best thing about that Jump Force thing was the collector's edition.
Yeah.
Was the amazing statue that came with Luffy, Goku, and Naruto on there. And that was absolutely amazing. The game was absolutely pish, but to be fair, that's I'd rather take the statue and just throw the disc out the window at that point.
I keep meaning to put that statue on our set for the gaming set.
You should, man. It's really cool.
The office somewhere. Yeah, I need to find that. I don't think our new wall will hold it up. We have a very flimsy shelf. It almost decapitated Josh last year. So with this.
There was we got the Mortal Kombat 10 one through, which had a gold scorpion mask.
Yes.
I've still got the DLC for the gold scorpion skin around there. And no one's selling that thing. I should just give it back to you guys to do a giveaway. Because by the time that Mortal Kombat... it might be Mortal Kombat 11 was the version we got. I can't remember which
11,
one it was.
Yeah, 11's the one
it's
we got.
It's the most current version of what it is. And they aren't exactly jumping back at the series anytime soon. I haven't heard anything about
Mortal Kombat. Apparently their next thing, but it's not. Nothing's been said officially. It was just lots of leaked reports on they're not doing Injustice, they're doing Mortal Kombat instead. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's some sort of soft reboot type thing.
And then I got the Valkyrie Chronicles 4 one that had a tiny little tank model, but it also came with a cap that had a dog on the top of it. So clearly that's the one that's going to win.
I mean my most expensive one is The Witcher 3. I got the collector's edition for that giant I think what you call the polystone statue of Geralt stabbing the griffin and stuff.
Yeah,
so I love that. That's always my pride and joy kind of thing. But yeah, sometimes you get press packs. They don't really do them that much anymore because they just give you digital codes, but you used to get press packs of artwork and materials and stuff. I still have the one for Horizon Zero Dawn, and I have the one for God of War as well. And they're treasured as just a this is us in the industry living this life thing. I sometimes just look at that and go, I can't believe I have this. But things are cool.
I do think that the there has been the big decline of the Legendary Edition stuff at the moment because again it's resources, it's cost of production, it's people just wanting actual good games to work on time rather than just being stuffed a load of tat. So you're seeing less and less of them, and the ones that still do exist, they command such an insane price. Like the Gotham Knights one, they had a Batman statue or something like that that you could get, and that was incredibly expensive for what it was.
Dead Space is doing, because they're doing what Doom did, where you can get Isaac Clarke's helmet if you get the new remake, the special edition of the remake. And I guess fully functioning helmets are a thing now, because they weren't a thing when Halo 3 was doing the rounds. The little tank, because I got the second tier, when Halo 3 had those two different things. And I didn't splash out for the helmet because I didn't have enough money, but I got the middle Steelbook one. But then seeing everyone get the cat helmet,
the Steelbook
it was
sucked as well for it, because it's just kind of I've paid £5 extra for a tin. Cool.
I love a good Steelbook.
I'm just I remember being really annoyed about that because the guy in game upsold me to that. And I was oh, sick. What else do I get? Oh, nothing, mate. You literally just get the pre-order tin. That's
a tin.
Oh, wicked. So I've bought a tin. Yay.
I always get the when you order a steelbook online. I did it for Skyward Sword HD, and then they give you the steelbook and then the regular case as well. So it's I tend to just, if it's physical, I tend to just trade in the regular one and then keep the steel. I've just got this weird graveyard of steelbooks that I can't even play the game for anymore, but I just have them in the background. Another question from
I was gonna say, we'll jump over to Instagram back and forth. Mate, back and forth.
Do it.
We've got a question that is a little bit out there, and by that I mean it's to do with Starfield. Jack Plummer 12 asks, do you think that Starfield's amounts of planets being randomly generated will require always online?
Oh no, I don't think it'll require always online, but I do think it'll suck. I think I've said this on pods and stuff, but just to be completely honest about it, I don't have any faith in Bethesda right now. So I'm just the amount that game's been pushed back, and it's not even making their first quarterly announcement thing. They've got this big showcase where they're showing stuff off, and it's Elder Scrolls Online and Minecraft Legends and all this stuff that just, who cares, in 2023, for new stuff anyway. And because of their track record and Fallout 76 being terrible, them then saying, we're taking on even more work than ever, and it's going to be a whole galaxy of this stuff. And I'm just you've tried algorithmically planting all these trees and all these planets and biomes, and No Man's Sky does it incredibly now. I always liked the launch version, but whatever. Yeah. But No Man's Sky has had now 6 years of tweaking their algorithms to give you genuinely brilliant infinite planets, and maybe Bethesda will get that right first time, but I doubt it.
When they can't even get their own soul world right the well, first yeah, exactly. time around.
Like a more dedicated thing.
I mean, people often forget the amount of bugs that Skyrim launched with. Everyone was just like, yeah. He looks at it now so fondly as being one of the greatest mm-hmm. games ever made. But mm-hmm. my God, was it rough. So rough.
I remember the one on PS3, it was like, because I got it on 360 and one of my friends had it on PS3 and they had yeah. that save bug where it's like, every time you save, it makes the file bigger and then it just bricks yeah. the PS3. And their console didn't get bricked, but they just had this ludicrous file size.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in terms of the Always Online thing, I don't know why that would be the assumption. Like, it shouldn't need Always Online.
The only thing is because Starfield is multiplayer, isn't it? They are pushing...
Oh, maybe. I'm not following it that closely because I kind of just want to be wowed by it. I saw the gameplay footage of it.
Yeah.
So I've seen those things. Yeah, maybe there's like asynchronous multiplayer.
That's what I was thinking, that maybe it's got something to do with that. I'm not entirely sure, but I think that there was a talk of it being added in at a later date, or if it was going to be a fully single player game that had multiplayer. I'm not entirely sure, but if it was always online, the only way
reported to be a single player experience.
Okay, fair enough. So maybe it was a case then that if it was going to be always online, that it would store the information about all the planets that you visited, and because it's procedurally generated, it would have to store that on like cloud stuff.
It depends how they've done the generated stuff. Like, is it pinging some sort of Bethesda server to try and sync? I don't know how they're doing it.
With Fallout 76, where it would like you pick up, that was the worst experience of my life. Like, Owsley and I, we downloaded that game a year after it had been released, when all of it was apparently fixed, right? It took ages to log into the game because we couldn't for the life of us figure out how to get it to work. Walked down the hill, went to this newest encampment area, had a look around and thought the graphics looked a bit better, it was a bit less janky. Tried to pick up a bloody cup, right? And the game just started freezing. And I was like, what is going on here? And it was like, and Osu was saying, oh, it's because it has to communicate to the server that you've picked up that cup. And everyone else in the game has to be then pinged that cup is now being picked up by you and moved around. I was like, this is bollocks. This is actually, like, I know that this is how it works in most games, but it was so like, pick it up, 3 seconds pass. You now have the cup in your hand. Put it down, 3 seconds pass. Like, oh my God, why?
I remember they did that weird update where they tried to, it was just something where they gave everybody like a safe crate, like a chest to put everything in. And then everything that people put in there, it was like the most valuable stuff, just got deleted. And it was, but it was some weird glitch with like a soup can, that like everyone got the same soup can, and then it broke the economy and stuff. I vaguely remember all sorts of stories from the last few years. But things like that, I feel like Bethesda's like greatest positive is that they're sort of this ramshackle garage band of a dev.
Yeah.
And they got big, and people, you know, if they're, to do the analogy, people love certain singles from them, but they almost should have stayed a garage band. And I'm sort of like, the bigger they get, the more teetery it gets. And
more
I'm just
money,
like,
more pressure.
Yeah, exactly, more pressure. And then I think they are quite good at sticking to their guns. And obviously Todd Howard's sort of legend for saying the most honest stuff, not necessarily like, oh, it just works. And like, we messed up and whatever. But it's like, there would be a way to match the scale of production to their attitude.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's not this, it's too big. And so I don't view this as the Hail Mary saving Xbox AAA thing. I think it's going to be a rickety, weird, like wooden cart that they'll bolt the wheels onto as it falls down the hill.
Yeah, so, it's a strange affair. But I, for one, am looking forward to it, but I'm kind of almost looking forward to it in a Schadenfreude way, where I'm just like, ooh, I'm not going to be pre-ordering this, and I want to see if it crashes and burns. Because imagine that. Imagine if Microsoft had spent all that money buying Bethesda, and then for them to just drop an absolute lemon of a turd onto the gaming marketplace. Just like, there you go, that was billions of pounds well spent.
Well, that's the thing. It's just like, I really want Xbox to be firing on all cylinders, because I love the 360 era, and I feel like they've not been that strong since then. And so it's just one of those things where I would love a Series X incredible game, like, you know, something that just absolutely dominates. And from Bethesda as well. Like, the energy around Skyrim was incredible once you got past the bugs. I'll believe it when I see it. So I'm just like, that idea of them saying there's thousands of planets, and I'm just like, yeah, but you've made about three. Everything else is, I mean, hopefully I'm wrong.
To dial back to the original question, though, no, it probably won't be always online, hopefully, because it doesn't seem to be that there's a reason for it. But then again, reason hasn't exactly stopped other companies from trying always online DRM. So, fingers crossed. Well,
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact... you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, the last time Bethesda tried it was when they put the Doom games out again, like Doom 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, yeah.
And every 10 seconds it would ping and go, you're not logged into Bethesda Online. And it was like enough people complained that they took it out. But they made Doom 1 always online. So they then took it out. So hopefully they learned from that. But yeah, I guess like you said, don't put anything past them. Next question from Lego Brick, who says, which upcoming game do we think will launch in the best state, and vice versa, which game will launch on day one to be the worst? I bought a PS4 for the Spider-Man launch and that game was perfect. Insomniac have my absolute faith to pull that off again. Yeah, I guess Spidey's probably a good front runner for something that will actually launch complete.
Yeah, because they're getting rare nowadays, aren't they? Yeah. Games that actually launch fully fixed. I mean, when Pokemon can't even do that right, then that's a thing. And I know that there's a lot of people that say that Game Freak do cut a lot of corners and stuff, but they've always at least been able to drop solid experiences that don't have any huge game-breaking bugs out of the gate, or ones that can not just be fixed and tweaked. Whereas last year was very ropey for them. A few devs actually have been coming out with just games that are just so subpar. But then again, it's so rare to get a game like Disco Elysium come out where it's just like, this just works. This has had a care and thought put into it. Everything else is just like, we'll fix it day one with a huge patch. And even then it will get by.
Yeah, I saw Callisto just got another big patch as well, where they've sped up even more animations and they've changed a few more like key gameplay things around. And it's just like, we are just the test audience at this point. It's just like, there's no real dedication to whatever sort of animation speed you had beforehand, or whatever those animations were supposed to be. And just like, changing it post-launch. I have a really bad feeling about Forspoken. I keep seeing that apparently only a handful of outlets have got review code.
Yeah.
And that game's out very soon. I think it's like on Monday or Tuesday.
Did we get approached for that?
No, we didn't get anything.
Amazing.
I saw even Eurogamer didn't get something. I think it was Andy Robinson or Richardson just said it's very rare that they don't get contacted at all, but they didn't get anything. I don't think SkillUp's got anything either, who tends to be a good like prominent critic. So
that's a warning sign. That is a red flag, because it's like I did a Choose Your Adventure recently on 7 times you were right to be worried about video games, and the moment that you don't get review copies early is the one where you just go, right, okay, what is going on here? Because I can think of maybe 2 games that launched where we got a code on day one that actually turned out to be good, and they are rare as
Totally. I guess Forspoken will be technically solid. It just feels like it's going to be hollow. But then,
I'm gonna look at what the release schedule of this year is.
I didn't even realize that FantaVision. You know, do you ever play FantaVision on the original PS2?
No, I did not. No.
Oh, it was a fireworks game. That game's getting like a sequel called FantaVision 2020X.
Oh, I do remember this actually. Yeah. No, I do.
It was
that.
So sick. I like had it at launch, and I think it's because it's a PSVR2 title.
Yeah.
But that's coming out on the 22nd of February. I've got my big list of stuff.
I'm very worried, but also really hoping that it is good. Atomic Heart, because they're juggling so many things at the moment that it all could come crashing down very, very quickly. It's a developer trying a new IP that is a huge scope. There's a lot of positive press going for it at the moment, but very few actual gameplay people who've had hands on with it. In fact, I can't think of any that I've had hands on with it, and it's coming out in February, so that's a scary one.
Yeah, the most recent thing with them was that they had to sever a bunch of multiplayer stuff off to try and like make the target. They were very honest about it.
Yeah, we were actually like we were positive on that, because I think that if a company realizes that something isn't working and they want to make it better as an experience overall for people, then yeah, I think that was the smartest call. I hope that
works. Yeah. Looking at this stuff,
Dead Island 2.
Dead Island 2. I think I'm going to go with Suicide Squad: Kill the Justice League. Okay. That's been in development for like 7 years, eight years.
Yeah.
And it's just that screenshot that leaked a few days ago where it showed the UI is just literally Call of Duty style, Warzone style. It's that difference between like if it's technically competent or just no one wants to touch this. But I think games that no one's going to want to touch, I think that'll be one of them. Unless there's something incredible story-wise, but I doubt it.
And this one's a bit more of a personal one as well, just to close out the question. It's Blood Bowl 3. Now, the reason that I'm excited, I want this to be a great game, but I'm really worried that it won't be, is because of the fact that the devs have already pushed it back. There was some crunch culture shenanigans going on. There was a lot of like negative press from internally that was coming out saying we're getting rid of this, but they're doing this thing that a lot of sports franchises do but get away with it because of the yearly annual release cycle. Now obviously you and I know that when FIFA, all progress, it means nothing. You take Scunthorpe FC to the top of the table and then in a couple of months' time you'll be reset again on a brand new version of the game, and you're going to do it all over again and again and again and again. They make you run the hamster wheel again, and they can do that because they release the game so quickly and so often that you don't ever see it as being the same experience. You see it as a, air quotes, brand new experience.
Yes.
Blood Bowl 3 has been in gestation now for absolutely years. The last game came out we're talking like the 2010s, around that era, and it's had all of its DLC come out, all of these new teams added, all of the bugs fixed, and then they go, Blood Bowl 3 is coming out, and it's like, wicked, what's it got? And it's like, right, well, we've got two new teams so far, or three new teams, it might have added another one in, but you can have less teams overall than the previous game. It's going to be buggier, because I played the demo version of it, the beta, and it was buggy as all hell because they were still trying to work out all the kinks and stuff of the new rule set that's being applied to it. And so you're going to start with less and it's going to look worse. And it's like, oh, that's a swing and a miss, because why would I buy this day one then? Like, what
that's
are you
almost like a contractual thing. It's like, oh, we need to get it out anyway because we spent this long on it, which is kind of the Skull and Bones thing.
I genuinely hate this the most about sequels, where you get all of the DLC coming in. It makes this huge, rich game. And then the next one, the next air quotes, big step comes in and it just gives you less. And because this is a sports game, you're going to end up with the same teams, but you're going to be charged again for them. And it's like, that's so uncool. That I've just bought. I've spent like 50 quid or so like on the DLC for all of these teams, and I'm gonna have to buy them again if I want to play them again in this new game.
That just feels like them seeing what they can get away with. They're just sort of, let's just see how much money we can get out the fandom to get back up to where you were. I guess we used to do that on old wrestling games or whatever. You would, well, not necessarily DLC wise, but in certain sports games, you end up buying the same stuff over and over again to bulk it all out.
Indeed. Shall we jump over to the Instagram questions, my friends?
We shall.
And we have a cinematic question right now.
Ooh,
and this is coming from James Phillips 94, who just says, Die Hard or Lethal Weapon?
Oh, Die Hard by a million miles.
Really?
I guess I don't know.
Because it's the whole franchise. Because Lethal Weapon got really good, whereas Die Hard got really bad.
I would say Die Hard has two really naff ones. Like the most recent one, I don't even remember the name of it. Die Hard Again, or whatever it was called.
Yeah, Die Hard with my son.
The one with his son, yes. The one with his son. That was like just terrible. Yeah. I don't mind Die Hard 4. I think it's kind of fun. And the bit when he's riding the aeroplane is kind of fun.
Do you know what? I feel like that film got unfairly dismissed.
When he throws a cop car at a helicopter.
That's bad. That is bad. Yeah. That is bad.
No, it's not. That's great.
But
that's
I did enjoy, even though they didn't like develop it and deliver it well, I enjoyed the idea of it like being, oh, I'm the bad guy who isn't physical. I don't want to do anything of this. I just want to use technology. And you are an old relic here. You do not understand how to beat me. And like, I enjoyed that because it was going at the same sort of time that, remember when Indiana Jones, the Crystal Skull came out?
We got another one of them this year.
I know, right? Let's not even talk about that. Like, disgusting heathens, horrible. But the idea of it's your old archaic 80s action hero in the modern era and not functioning well is an interesting story to tell. I just feel like Die Hard 4.0 just didn't exactly deliver it well.
I think it's like the Max Payne 3 approach, which I'll always fly the flag for Max Payne 3. But like, yeah, for me, Die Hard 1 and 2 are both brilliant. Like, I obviously, like, I mean, I think 2, it's not necessarily overlooked, but people tend to talk about 1 because of the whole Christmas conversation. What? But like, 2 is brilliant as well.
3, Die Hard with a Vengeance is my personal favourite. I just think that the whole sort of, like, it, just having Samuel L. Jackson involved in it is
I was
going to
say Die Hard
so good.
Yeah, you've got all this, like, because I always think of the tie-in game as well. It's like IP wise. I remember driving the taxi around and stuff. But like, yeah, Die Hard 3, all the stuff with Sam Jackson, like the whole set piece on the tanker towards the end, like trying to get on that moving tanker. I'll take that over Lethal Weapons, even though I do love the Jet Li Lethal Weapon. I think that's 4.
Yeah.
When he came in. And but I don't have as much of a working knowledge of Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, I guess it's because of the fact that I just sort of grew up watching them side by side. We just, like, me and a few friends used to just watch loads of action films back to back for just like silly nights in. And Lethal Weapon was always on the regular rotation because it is, I feel like it's on the level of being more parody. Die Hard takes itself more seriously than Lethal Weapon ever did, and I think that that's why it's the charm of it. It's just kind of like, look, come on, yeah, like you wouldn't survive all of this,
and I think they definitely steered more into that over time. That bit in Die Hard 4 where he's just literally like surfing like a jet,
it's like a construction site.
And then, like, I looked up the names of these ones because it's A Good Day to Die Hard, I think, is the one with his son.
It's such a bad pun that I almost respect it.
I know. I think that was like as far as those ones went. And there's Live Free or Die Hard. I think that might be.
Didn't even know that one.
I don't know.
Oh, was that
I know. I think it's an alternate title for it.
Okay.
But yeah, those would be my picks for them. Honest NPC says, "Hello, you podcast legends." Well, hello to yourself.
Hello.
As well. Is the Microsoft/Ubisoft issue proof that gamers are tired of getting the same experiences from continuing franchises and they want new experiences? Is this why indie games are providing better game experiences than quote unquote major AAA titles? Stay well and stay safe.
Now, this is an interesting one because Scott and I touched on this recently on a news that probably will be up now.
It's true, it'll be up by the time this comes out.
Where we spoke about how I believe that the overreach of the video game publisher giant and the massive expenditures that it racks up is going to cause a collapse of its own portfolio. We're going to see them squeeze tighter but only keep maybe 2 or 3 major IPs. And unfortunately for us, as a gaming community, we're probably going to see much more homogeneity when it comes to the AAA experience, because they will look at what works, they will say that is how you make your money, and everyone will end up copying each other. Your Call of Duties will bleed into other other franchises. Your open world genre tropes will bleed into other things. Whatever works will be the thing that will work going forward, according to all of those financial bods in charge of the strings at these publishers. So it is up to the independent community to remind people what gaming is all about, as it always has done, arguably. But I can't think of a better time for the indie devs. Tools for game creation are more readily available than ever. Funding is more readily available because publishers are looking back and just going, geez, we need a new IP, or we need something to just put a little bit of money into that could maybe turn a huge profit, like Hades did or whatever. So it's an interesting one.
Like, with the EA originals, like, you don't get that many of them, but like, even like A Way Out, It Takes Two, Unravel, like It Takes Two was like the Game Awards Game of the Year last year. Like, that managed to blow up quite a lot, and that is a mid-budget game.
Yeah, I was about to say it was made on a fraction of one of their other games, like what's that, like Battlefield. Like, for example, how much money did Battlefield 5 take from EA? A ton. But if they put more sort of like seeds in the ground, like A Way Out and It Takes Two around there, doing that sort of thing, then in 5-10 years time, those could themselves be their own standalone franchises. I would happily play It Takes Two Two, or It Takes Three It Takes Two Three, or whatever.
That's my thing. I've said this like across the board. I'm begging the likes of Rockstar, Naughty Dog to do what EA Originals is, and that's a weird sentence because EA do so little right. But the idea of imbuing smaller creators or people like Joseph Fares to be able to get their ideas off the ground, like, you would have 20 more Kojimas or something, rather than just going like a 5-7 year dev turnaround for something that might just fall on its face, like Forspoken or like Suicide Squad. Like, it's just so untenable as a business model, whereas you could have so much more creative stuff out there.
Well, look at Rockstar. You've raised a great point there. They are content to just sit on their laurels and rinse GTA 5 online for all of the money that it's worth, and it is worth a lot of money. GTA very 6 true. As we already know, is in a very troubled state at the moment, with lots of rewrites, restarts, none of the creative leads that were originally attached to the franchise involved, and the huge financial pressure that they have have to make more money than GTA 5, which sounds impossible to any other thing. Why doesn't Rockstar just take a fraction? Hey, just take half a year's earnings from GTA Online and its sales and just put that into publishers, into new development studios to try something different. Because, hell, nowadays they've become so laser focused on the GTA experience. No one knows them for the other stuff they did. They made a bloody good ping pong game back in the day. They made, obviously, all of the Midnight Club stuff that was
coming out. I was going to say, Smuggler's Run, Midnight Club.
They do stuff that is really interesting and amazing, but they just can't be bothered now. And
I just think that it's that thing of like making increasingly bigger corporate bets and they want the bigger payoffs. But like in gaming, the turnaround is just so much bigger than turning a movie around or a TV show or something. We're talking about 7 to 8 to 10 year turnarounds for AAA stuff. And it's just like, and sometimes it falls down and it's just a waste of money and time and everything else. So I just, for me, the indie space right now represents the really furtive creative space of the 2000s, where like budgets were a lot smaller. And you just saw like the likes of the PlayStation 2 era or the 360 era, like the amount of ideas that got off the ground. It's like things that are coming out now, like Evil West or like, and Callisto even, are good throwbacks to how like quote unquote gaming used to be, but they still look great. And it's like, they still have really good mechanics and stuff. And I know you can do more with that, but even something like Hellblade was like held up as like a AAA looking game on a AA budget or something. So I think there's promise. But yeah, if you find yourself looking at all the AAA stuff going like, oh my God, this is exhausting and soul sucking, just dive into indies. That's the stuff that you want. That's kind of the lifeblood of gaming.
Indeed. Okay, so we are back to Instagram now to address what Harry Poulet, or Paulette, 96 has said. I just get a French spin on your name there, my friend. What's your dream VR game if you could make one? Now, this is a tough one because it's such a interesting experience, a sensory overload. But what would you make? Because
I'm two words, Spider-Man. Just let me just be Spider-Man. Oh,
just motion sickness the game then, is it?
I want to, because you can kind of do it in, was it Homecoming had a VR tie-in and then Far From Home had one as well. But they were just really small experiences where it was like, you're Spider-Man on a roof and it was more meant to just advertise the movie. But you could fire some webs off and then you do, at the very end of that demo, you jumped off the building, but it largely took control away from you and you just swung away into the logo. And I was like, that thing of being teetering on the edge of a building with a web shooter and going for it. And if you got the momentum right, and I guess the PSVR 2 has all the haptic stuff in the headset and everything, maybe you can simulate wind somehow. But I would love like a full-on Spider-Man VR. I mean, so much money there.
That would be exceptional. You just have somebody next to you with a fan. Like, it's just like, I'm going fast, put it on two.
Waft me. Like, yeah, I would love that.
That's a really good idea, actually. But again, I think that so many people would be motion sick just trying to do that.
That's probably why they haven't done it yet, because they can't find a way to give you the rush without it like wiping people out.
Exactly. And you've seen people use those filters on like TikTok and stuff where it's like them repeating themselves and people fall over because they get disorientated or people jump into their TVs and stuff like that. I think that for me, I would make... I tell you what I'd love. They kind of hinted at it with a PS3 game way back way, but never really capitalized on it, where they tried to use AR and to bring a card game to life. I would want them to make Yu-Gi-Oh!
Eye of Judgment.
That's the one, yeah, Eye of Judgment. I would want them to make a Yu-Gi-Oh! Game in VR, where you had your little gauntlet on the side there, and whatever card you put on came to life in the gaming sphere around you, because then that way you'd really feel like you were part of the battles, like waving to your opponent over the other side there, showing them your cards, putting it down, but then seeing the huge sort of like creatures that you've summoned right next to you would be incredible. It'd be so cool.
That was like that whole thing. So the Eye of Judgment was like a weird spin-off of the Eye Toy. You needed like a specific like battle map thing that it read through the camera. I don't even know if the PSVR has any sort of like depth perception stuff, if it could tell there was a surface in front of you and then put stuff on that surface, or maybe you can map it yourself or something.
I guess if you've got like the controllers, the special ones that you've got, and you're picking up an object and you're putting it down onto a place that it registers as being in game space, then it could work like that. But something like to make that more immersive, or like a board game simulator that allowed you to feel like you were there. Imagine if you and I were playing like Dungeons and Dragons, for example, and it was like the tabletop simulator thing, but we're in like a rustic tavern, and that's the VR setting. We can look around, mm-hmm. we can hear people chatting and glasses clinking and stuff, but we're playing on this table in the tavern, mm-hmm. this little game, and just like that could be a really fun experience.
Yeah, stuff like that would be lush. I'm just thinking of things like more, I'm thinking like big blockbuster, what can you do, motion sickness type, let me fly an X-Wing doing the trench run or something. But yeah, it's something like Pokemon as well. I'm just thinking mm-hmm. of stuff that I love when I was younger. Because basically for me, VR is like, how do you make playable the thing you imagined when you were a kid? Mm-hmm. Like the idea of, like, when I was a kid, I was fascinated by the idea of Pokemon. And I wished they were real like so much. Yeah. And I was like, if you could do an actual, me and you standing across from each other, but then we put the headsets on and I see your Pokemon standing next to you, or
that'd be amazing.
You throw the Pokeball, or I don't know, it would take Nintendo investing in it, but something like that would be really cool. Final question from Pinky, who says, what does the Halo news mean for newer Microsoft acquisitions? It could show confidence in upcoming projects from Bethesda, Obsidian, Activision, etc. But on the other hand, it makes their position very precarious if they underform. He also asked if I'd lost any marbles earlier in the week. It seems like maybe I'd lost some marbles. That was definitely in reference to The Last of Us, Pinko. But we'll see how the next episode goes. But yeah, we should reiterate that the more discussion is over on the YouTube channel. But yeah, what do you think about like the future of Microsoft stuff? Because it must be weird if someone said they're going to acquire you and then they sever 10,000 employees.
Yeah, you think that you were just being involved in some sort of asset strip operation, wouldn't you? It's just like you're going to buy us for the IPs and then you're going to fire mm-hmm. us the next day and then just take all of the licenses. It's an interesting one. Microsoft don't have a great track record with buying up developers and delivering with them, because think about what happened with Rare. Did we get grabbed by the ghoulies and then they bought up...
just disappeared.
I know that EA bought up Criterion, for example, and mm-hmm. then they just didn't get them to make another Burnout game ever, mm-hmm. and that was the stupidest thing because they got them to work on racing stuff in other games, mm-hmm. and it was the best bit about those games.
I thought Xbox as a division were notably separate within Microsoft. Like, when I read about Microsoft layoffs, my mind didn't even go to Xbox at all.
Yeah.
And then when like later in the week when VGC reported like, oh hey, by the way, Bethesda and 343 have been impacted, like I just didn't even realize that was on the table. But the idea that like someone at Microsoft can say like, we don't need this gaming division or as much of this gaming division as we did before is weird, because Xbox themselves,
that's the thing, if they can just make Game Pass work on a small scale team, then they'll probably focus on that, because they're not in the business of developing games themselves anymore, really. Mm-hmm. So they're probably just going, yeah, sure, Game Pass is the future for our company. It always seems mm-hmm. to have been the moment that it was launched. And basically, I can see them just trying to buy up a ton of new developers just to put onto the platform and say, you are now Game Pass exclusive. So
that's what I think is the new core of the company. Yeah, I guess like in terms of, that's the whole thing. The proof's always in the pudding, because they acquired so many different people and they greenlit so many different ideas. Even Psychonauts 2 we got because of the acquisition stuff. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, yeah, if it can just as easily be taken away and you just don't get any story DLC for Halo or whatever, then like that is the other side of it, where you're just a number on a page at some point and they can just get rid of you. We will see what happens with all the Halo stuff going forward. But a massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions and stuff. This has been the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP.
The UBP. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me. And remember that you can always check in with Scott and myself over on the social medias every single Thursday, where we will be putting out the call for questions, my friend. The C... call for CFQ, the CFQ for the UBP. Oh my God.
If I knew how to put an effect on your voice, I would echo that. But if you've successfully echoed, I figured it out. If not, I have no idea.
So I think that I will be over on Instagram at RetroJ, where the O is a zero, and I'll be putting out the call for questions every single Thursday. And Scott will be doing the same over on Twitter, where he is at /LP89.
Beautiful. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next week.
By the mugs, goodbye. By the mugs, by the mugs, by the mugs.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.